Access number 13629, Reel 1.
Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Badbrook Barracks in Warwick. My father was a regular soldier.
Did you have your education in Warwick?
No, no. We left there. I was probably only 18 months old. And I grew up on the Isle of Wight. My mother's family was an island family, and that's where I grew up.
How old were you when you left school?
15.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I did. I joined Whitbread and Company, the Brewers. In fact, I had to get a job because my father was taken seriously ill from a blood clot, which he got in the First World War, which finally hit his brain, and he had a cerebral hemorrhage. And I had to leave school and get a job.
Were you working on the Isle of Wight?
Yes, in Newport, I call it my hometown, although I wasn't actually born there. But the rest of the family were. Yes, I worked for Whitbread's.
How did you come to be in the forces?
Well, after Chamberlain came back from Munich waving his bit of paper saying peace in our time, we all knew, of course, there was going to be a war. And so my best friend and I, a chap named Bunny Ramage, looked around for what we could do. We'd been mad keen on flying. We wanted to fly. There was a thing called the Civil Air Guard, which we inquired about. But the nearest place we could do any flying training was Portsmouth. And we had to undertake to do 2 flying hours a week, which cost 30 shillings an hour. And we had to pay half of it. So we had 2 lots of 15 bob, plus 2 lots of fares to and from Portsmouth. And my wage at the time was 25 shillings a week. So we couldn't afford to join the Civil Air Guard. The local units, there were 2 Princess Beatrice's Isle of Wight Rifles, which during the First World War was an infantry. But at this time, 1938-9, they were 9.2 coast defence guns buried in concrete and totally immobile. The alternative was the 219 Battery RA, which was mobile anti-aircraft. So we joined them.
What did you learn to do in that unit at first?
Well, it was obviously training. We had 2 drill nights a week of 2 hours each. And we went on weekend camps, learning to work the controlling instruments, rangefinders, predictors and so on, and learning to fire the guns. And then the scheme was that once a year these TA units all over the country went to camp for a fortnight in the summer to actually do some shooting.
What did you feel about the quality of the training that you got in the TA pre-war?
Enthusiastic, certainly. And on the whole, pretty good. The equipment was the problem, of course. Desperate shortage of everything.
Can you tell me about the guns that you learnt to handle?
The first guns we had were quite old, 3-inch, which had the most vicious crack when they went off. The new gun which was coming out was the Mobile 3.7, and that's the one we eventually got. Later on, I suppose about 1940 to 41, 4.5-inch guns came out. The 3.7, in my view, was the best. It was flexible, easily moved, accurate.
What was your reaction when you heard Chamberlain declare war?
It was totally expected. I mean, we'd just been waiting for it. You see, We actually went to camp on the 19th of August, 1939. Officially, we went for a fortnight's camp. We'd only been there 3 or 4 days. This was in Sheringham in Norfolk. We'd only been there 3 or 4 days when we were hastily returned to our war station, which was Nettlestone on the Isle of Wight. So we knew, in fact, that war was coming. It was just a question of time before it was declared. And in effect, we went to camp for a fortnight and came back 7 years later.
Did you sit and listen to the broadcast of Chamberlain?
Yes. Yes. In the drill hall in the headquarters of the 57th Wessex Regiment, which is 219 Battery is part of. And by that time, I was on a course. And at 11 o'clock, knowing the broadcast was going to be made, we, as a course, with all the instructions on, sat in front of the radio and listened.
So there was no dismay on your part?
None at all, no.
Now, I think that when the war started to hot up and we got the enemy air attacks, you were in this area of Portsmouth, Southampton, Isle of Wight.
That's right, yes.
Can you tell me how you came to be here?
Well, the course I mentioned was, in fact, called number one GL course. GL stood for gun laying, and it was a euphemism for radar. They didn't want to broadcast the fact that we had radar, and I was on this number one radar course. The course lasted 3 months, and I qualified with a bunch of other guys from the battery. And we became the radar section of the 219 battery. It was a little while before we got any equipment, but in fact, 219 was the first battery in the regiment to get a set of radar equipment.
What did the radar section have to do?
Detect and track enemy aircraft, or any aircraft, but obviously we were interested in the enemy ones. And it was coupled to the gun control instruments. And so by following a plane with the radar, the instruments passed information to the guns electronically. Needles were superimposed on other needles to make the guns follow the radar. And we could give them the bearing, and we could also tell them the range. What we couldn't do with the early sets was to give them an angle of elevation. That came later.
Was it easy to operate, as far as you were concerned?
It was. The only problem was that nobody believed in it. anyone who wasn't on the equipment refused to take any notice of it. Until they were in duty band following us one night when the searchlights picked up the plane we were following, and suddenly these guys on the projector on the crosswires of their lens saw this illuminated aeroplane and suddenly realised that we were actually doing a job.
Did that make all the difference in their attitude?
After then, yes, they believed us.
So I'd ask you how you came to be in the Southampton area.
Ah, yes. Since we were the first to get equipment, we were in fact moved around to give other sites, other batteries, other units, a sight of and experience of this equipment, because sets were rather slow coming through. Eventually, of course, everyone was equipped with it, but initially we did a bit of a cook's tour, going round showing other units what the equipment was, roughly how it worked, and coupled it onto their instruments to show them that it did work. That's why we moved around so much.
Where were you when the first enemy raids started to be experienced?
Let me think. Probably Nettleston, I think, on the Isle of Wight. That was our home base. But when they really began to clobber Portsmouth, we were moved across to Sina Warren on Hayling Island so that we'd be better able to take part in the defence of Portsmouth. And that we were there during the major part of the Blitz.
Can you describe what it was like?
Yes, it was, well, obviously very noisy at times when you saw the damage, distressing. I remember going on leave, a weekend leave from Hayling Island to the Isle of Wight, and there's a little ferry from Hayling to the eastern end of Portsmouth Island. When I got across, expecting to get a trolley bus, all electric power was out in Portsmouth, and it was, what, about a 4 mile walk. Parts of Southsea were ablaze. I walked through King's Road, and it was on fire both sides, and you sort of had to dash through the middle in places. And I got to the Southern Railway jetty to get the Isle of Wight ferry, and that, the jetty, had been hit. And there were no boats until later in the day. So I joined an ARP gang, and they were, we were going round pulling down dangerous walls with ropes and grapnels and so on, walls that might collapse. So I spent half the day doing that before I was able to get a boat to go home.
You just pitched in voluntarily?
Well, yes. I mean, we were doing nothing. They did say anybody want to help, you know. And we, so, yes, we joined in.
Were there any other occasions when you saw that type of thing?
Not as closely as that. Obviously, we were distant from the town. And we could see what was going on and see the fires and everything else, but that's the only time I actually walked through it. Other things, I mean, the low-flying Messerschmitts would machine gun. They machine gunned an Isle of Wight ferry when my sister was coming home on leave. She was in the ATS. They machine gunned the Market Square in Newport. My father's office was on the first floor over a grocery store, and machine gun bullets were rattling around the square. All exciting stuff. You know.
Did the German Air Force attacks at this time cause much hatred amongst the civilians, do you think? Or were they just philosophical?
I think they're pretty philosophical. Obviously resentful and longing to hear that we were chucking stuff back. I mean, the first raid on Berlin was the biggest morale booster, although it wasn't perhaps all that effective, but it was a tremendous morale booster.
How do you think morale in Portsmouth and such places stood up to the German Air Force attacks?
It stood up very well. At the same time, I mentioned this going on leave from Hayling Island and the South Sea being on fire. I went back from leave and they'd had raids every night all that week. And certainly the people were, well, I suppose shell-shocked was the answer. They'd had taken a fair old hammering night after night, and they were certainly not as sparkling as they had been, you know. But the morale was still there.
Did you ever come across anybody who said that we couldn't take it and who said that we should come, therefore, to an agreement with Hitler?
No. Nothing like that at all. The attitude was, for God's sake, let's do something about giving it back to them. Everybody just wanted to hammer back at them, you know. not a hint of surrender or whatever. And, I mean, this is when Churchill came into his own. I've still got his speeches on tape, and they still give you a lift to listen to them. If he did nothing else in the war, his effect on the morale of the nation was worth everything.
So you personally used to listen to them as they were broadcast?
Yes, yes, whenever I could, yeah.
Was that on Hailing Island?
Yes, we had, obviously we had radios there.
How effective do you think the work of your battery on Hailing Island was in the defence of Portsmouth?
It's hard to say how many planes were shot down. Certainly, you can't really talk about an individual battery because so many people are firing. But certainly, we killed quite a lot of German aircraft. The anti-aircraft forces killed a lot of aircraft. It's difficult to say which battery. See, a lot of the firing was barrage, as it was in Tobruk later on. When it gets to the stage that a lot of planes are sort of diving on a target, you can't focus on an individual plane. So what you do is put up what's called a box barrage. Every gun is giving a range and a bearing to fire on. And in theory, and in practice too, the shells burst inside a box. And the planes have to dive through it to do their job. But that makes it impossible to say who actually shot the plane down.
Would you actually see German planes coming down in flames?
Yes. Oh, yes. And, even in the daylight raids, the early daylight raids, we saw them smoking on the way down into the sea. In the Air Force Battle of Britain, we watched the dogfights. I mean, there's the trails way up in the sky, and they're flying in and out of each other, and planes getting hit and crashing down into the sea.
Did you also take part in the defence of Southampton?
Yes, there's a site called Nursling. We were there for a while. But not for very long. And that was before the worst of the night raids started. I think that was Christmas 1940, we were there over Christmas. So I didn't see too much of the Southampton Blitz.
Whereabouts in Nursling were you?
Well, Nursling's only a small village. We were in a field near Nursling. Yeah. Unbuilt up, you know.
Did you see the devastation in Southampton as well?
Not at that time. I didn't actually see Southampton till after I came back from overseas.
Any other incidents that happened to you during this period in the Blitz?
I can't think of any more from the war point of view. The only time I was ever recalled from leave was on my 21st birthday. I'd got leave to go and celebrate my 21st birthday, and I got a telegram recalling me. This was in the summer of 1940, and I had to go back because some bright spark had got the idea that if we put these radar units on a steep slope on a high cliff, so they were pointing down to the sea, we would be able to see the invasion fleet coming. So we were shoved off to Ventnor and put St Boniface down, which is about 900 feet high. And there's a very, very steep grassy patch at the top of the cliff. We were put on that and sort of anchored into the ground and everything else. Waiting for the invasion to come. And we didn't see anything. There was no invasion.
So that was an unpopular move, was it?
Well, it was with me. It was my 21st birthday. It also was a bit hairy. We didn't enjoy The feeling, see, in the radar thing, you're enclosed in a plywood box, really, with your two cathode ray tubes, a team of three operating it. And it's swinging around. You turn it by means of a handle. And on a steep slope, it's quite difficult. There's a very wide aerial of, array, and it's quite hard work, sort of cranking it against the slope. And you all had this horrible feeling that if the stay went, the rope went, or whatever, the anchor pulled, you'd wind up down in the sea. It was uncomfortable.
Now, in March 41, you went abroad. Can you tell me about that, please?
Yes. I was, by this time, a sergeant in charge of the radar unit. I had a lance sergeant who had just got married. And because we were two sergeants and other batteries didn't have two, a volunteer was called for to join this unit to go overseas. And Johnny Ball was the lance sergeant. He just got married. So I said, OK, I'll go. And I went up to Southend and joined the 69th Regiment, 192 Battery. And off we sailed on the SS Orion, which used to ply on the Australia route. It carried 1,200 passengers, and there were 7,000 troops on board. So it was a little congested.
Did you meet the enemy on the way?
What terrified us was the depth charging. We sailed from Liverpool, and you know, the Irish Sea and round the top of Ireland, the convoy escort was depth charging like mad, and obviously it was a submarine favourite spot. We didn't actually see a submarine, we weren't actually fired on that I know of, but just the fact that all these bangers were going on was a bit unsettling.
Was the 69 HA regiment exactly the same type of thing as the 57?
Yes, it was. It was a territorial unit. I mean, there were dozens of these all over the country, and the setup was exactly the same. It was a Birmingham unit, and that's when I became expert at Birminghamese.
When you arrived in Egypt, what were your first impressions?
It was hot and dusty. We landed at Port Tewfik and went by train to Cairo. And we were to be billeted out near Mina House, where the pyramids are. And there was a certain lack of forethought on the part of somebody. We had been 7 weeks on board a ship and we were only allowed to wear plimsolls. Well, when we landed, of course, we had to put our boots on. And then we were expected to march 23 miles to the billet. And in no time at all, blokes were going down with blood coming out of their boots, you know. 7 weeks in plimsolls doesn't fit you for a route march. So in the end, they had to get some lorries and transport us.
Did you see anything of the Egyptian civilians?
Yes, lots of them. The young lads were a nuisance. They had a great habit of wanting to shine your boots. And if you said no, they had a handful of mud and they threw it on your boots. So you had little option. They were offering you their sisters and that sort of thing. Altogether, not a very pleasant place to be.
Did you ever come across hostility from Egyptian civilians?
Resentment, really. Resentment. I mean, this was the time of King Farouk. They resented him. And, of course, we were the controlling power in Egypt at the time. Farouk was undoubtedly a lackey of the West. So there was resentment, certainly.
Now, can you tell me how you came to go to Tobruk?
Yes, we had several weeks of acclimatisation. We, in fact, did a prisoner of war guard for a few weeks. Hundreds of thousands of Italian prisoners after Wavell's push, or tens of thousands anyway, and very few Germans. And the difference was that the Italians were totally willing to do anything. In fact, every sergeant had an Italian batman. Mine taught me to sing O Sole Mio in Italian. The Germans, on the other hand, were ramrod stiff and hostile, arrogant, everything you can think of. And then after a few weeks of that, we went to Amarea, which is a staging camp, and from there we joined HMS Abdiel, a mine-laying cruiser, which took us up to Tobruk. Tobruk could only be supplied on the moonless nights of the month, so there are either two or three nights when reinforcements and supplies could be taken up to the fortress. My great thrill was on HMS Abdiel, first of all, amazed at the quality of food the Navy got. We were getting sort of sausage, bacon, tomato for breakfast instead of bully beef and biscuits. And the other thrill was wandering around the ship, finding out that HMS Abdiel was in fact built by J.S. White of Cowes, Isle of Wight. There was the brass plate telling me that I was on an Isle of Wight ship. That's quite a thrill.
Did the enemy try to intercept you on the way?
Yes, we had some bombing, and the Navy. There was the Abdiel and three destroyers. The Sikh was one, I think. The Zulu, can't remember the other one. But yes, they all opened fire, and none of us were hit. It was pandemonium when we got into Tobruk Harbour, pitch black, of course, and the lighters came out from the quayside because the ships stayed in the middle of the harbour because they had to make a quick exit. We were shoved over the side, down netting, into these lighters. And then shouts, we're below and all, and boxes of ammunition and everything. Everything was being thrown down into the lighter. And we were dodging like mad. And then eventually we were taken ashore and given a cup of tea, well, a Dixie of tea, which we all spat out. It was salt. The wells of Tobruk were contaminated by the sea. And eventually, of course, we got used to it. And in fact, after Tobruk was relieved and we got down back to civilization, for several months we were putting pinches of salt in our tea.
Where was your unit supposed to go in Tobruk?
The sites all had a name. The battery went to a J site, which was out towards the perimeter, out of the town,